But yeah, that's
and it's not like everybody's a Rastafarian there. Most people are right?
Yeah. Learning. Well, like, things are so confused with it. With it. Is a Rasta thing. It's not at all. Rastas are actually really accepting of homosexuality. They don't really agree with it, but they're not gonna get in your face over that. It's a Jamaican thing. It's just a straight Jamaican culture thing. And it's because, and I think it's probably because, you know, it's a culture that's been destroyed by the First and Second World, so they take having children really seriously. It's a real, like, just primal look at it. But yeah, I mean, Rastas are probably like 5 to 10% of Jamaica, if that. They stick out. They really stick out.
One other guy I remember was like one of the, so I went to like a, that was my first sort of encounter with like the Catholic Church community. Like, I wasn't brought up in it. But the community was like very active, that my aunt and uncle were involved in there. And I remember this one guy who ran. He was like a Chinese guy. I forget his name.
Well,
but
dude, Jamaican ran. That's a big vibe.
He ran this hot sauce company called Pica Peppa.
Oh my!
And I just remember he would come to church strapped, like carrying a gun, like in his waistband, of his pants, of his, like, jogging pants, you know?
Yes, it's something,
like, whoa.
Something people don't, have like, asked me about a lot. They're like, why do all these dub records, why are there, you know, ones that are all about kung fu movies, which is the thing that the Wu-Tang Clan really appropriated? Well, the thing is, Jamaica's, like, poor. It's dirt poor, right? And so they couldn't afford Hollywood movies in the 70s. Like, they literally could not get Hollywood movies to play there. They didn't have the money. So Jamaica would just get these second-rate movies from China. And also, because, now in the 70s, guns were a big thing in Jamaica, but no one could afford them, okay? So everyone wanted a gun before everyone had one there, but they couldn't afford them. So Bruce Lee was like the national hero because he killed with his own hands. He didn't need a gun. And that was really big for the Jamaicans. But yeah, I if I remember correct, and they call them Chinese. I wasn't just being a dick when I said that. They call them Chinese in Jamaica. I think it's a good 2% of the population is Chinese in Jamaica. I'm pretty sure. There's a very, very large Chinese population and also Jamaican Chinese mixed population as well. It's a huge, huge part of it. The people are always like, why are these weird Jamaicans like going on and on about Bruce Lee and this and that? And it's like, no, Bruce Lee was like a god to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the church there was very inclusive of a charismatic type, you know, speaking in tongues and stuff.
So
the Catholic Church there was very sort of inclusive in that sense of the charismatics. And there was a lot of other denominations, right? Protestant denominations. There was a lot of Adventists, I think. Yeah.
I would assume Jamaica's a hot spot for these, like, manipulative church-based movements just go and fuck with poor people. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that the church, the church isn't bad, or it is kind of bad, but, you know, a lot of these churches, especially, I think, in the, you know, in the current day, some of the missionaries don't really have the purest intentions, and Jamaica can be an easy place for that.
Yeah, the legacy there of, like, the sort of Marcus Garvey revolution was, like, definitely still felt, because basically all the wealthy people and the landholders and stuff had been kind of chased out, you know?
Yeah.
Because there was almost a revolution that happened there where they were just like, yeah, take the you know, take the land back from these colonial families. So a lot of the wealthy families at that time, like late 70s, I guess, fled the country.
There was a literal revolution there in the late 70s. I don't think many people understand that.
No, it was Yeah, that's right.
And just this whole
Go ahead.
You see it play out in the records where Ed Ciaga was. There's the two parties, the PLP and the JNP, and I always forget which one is which and who the two were. Oh, Manly and Ciaga, and you know the reggae records. They pick one or the other to back. You know, Bob Marley came out on stage with both of them to try to do a peace thing. But I mean, it's sort of like what's going on in America right now. Wow, it's sort of this whole like, you know, MAGA versus BLM thing on a smaller level. But as I look back, I've never been able to understand it because I'm always like, wow, it's just the same shit. Like, what the hell? It's the same. It's literally they're fighting about the same thing, just with a different guy at the front line. And, yeah, wow, that's kind of exactly what we're witnessing right now.
Another interesting guy I met at Teachers College at Columbia was Lambros Komitas, who was an anthropologist, and he had been one of the first people to go and take video cameras to film Rasta religious ceremonies and interview like Rastas in Jamaica. And so his field work that he did in the 50s and 60s there led to this big study that was funded by the National Institute of Health in the United States, where they studied all these Jamaican workers, like laborers, and they did these controlled studies of the laborers who smoked marijuana and the ones who didn't and maybe drank alcohol. And
wow.
So this study was completed and they did about a 5-year, I think, you know, NIH-funded study of all these, like, I think quite a large group of workers. And they found basically that the workers who used ganja instead of alcohol were like way more healthy. They had like way reduced incidence of a bunch of, you know, heart disease, hypertension, various sort of chronic ailments. So this study was published, I think it was in 1965 or 1966 it was first published. It was called Ganja, I think, the book, and by Lambros Komitas. So you can look this up. And it sold out really quick. This was, of course, like right around the time that the war on drugs was being conceived, right, in the United States. And so the first print of the book, which was carried by, I think, like some big publisher, forget which publisher was carrying it, but Professor Komitas, you know, called them up and was like, yeah, I guess the first printing sold out. Like, are we going to do a second edition? And the publishing company was like, oh, we never published that. We have no records of your book. So they just disappeared the book. And they denied ever having published the first edition.
Because they didn't want to seem to be that they were promoting marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was right in a pivotal political period, I guess.
And that's pretty funny because now we're in the reverse. Now we're in the reverse where, like, if you tell your doctor you don't smoke weed, they want to put you in jail.
Yeah.
And, like, now
you're
like,
yourself
you know,
a coma.
Wait a second. Not if your doctor's from Singapore.
Yeah, good call. on the real, like, now that I'm attempting to not smoke weed, like, as much or even at all, man, it's pretty crazy the way that triggers people. People who don't even smoke weed want to get up in my grill and be like, oh yeah, I mean, you have real problems, you asshole. You think weed is the actual problem? Well, sure, it's one of them. It's one of the small things, and you got to get the small things out of the way if you want to work on the big things. And it's really blowing my mind how successful this, like, because I think you and I have a pretty similar view on this, Blake, where we think weed in itself is very healthy, but it's used very unnecessarily. And that's really what I tell people, and they just fucking jump down my throat, like, well, my mother has cancer, and if she didn't smoke weed, it's like, yeah, I didn't say anything about your mother. I didn't say anything about how she lives. I don't talk about people's mothers. That's horrible. But, like, yeah, it's blown my mind how successful this weed cures everything campaign has been. I started getting really bugged out when I didn't know why, about a year or two ago when the legal weed thing started really spreading. And it first hit me on this, like, well, I was raised a criminal. I was raised with drug dealers. So this hurts my income. You know, I don't sell drugs because I'm that stupid. Oh, this hurts my income, right? But, the more I think about it, it's like, no. When I think about it in terms of, like, well, what kind of world would I want to bring a child into? What would I do with a child in this world? It's crazy to think that, like, teachers now will be like, well, I'd like to go home and smoke weed and watch Netflix and jerk off to Pornhub. So if you're 12 years old and you have a headache and you can't do your homework, steal some of your parents' weed and smoke it. It's like a fucking Robert Crumb comic, but it's not like that. It's reality.
Yeah, it's,
Bulletin. Furry Lip died today.
Who?
Oh.
Who did?
Furry Lint. My play is called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint? Radio play. Based on Larry Flint.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Larry died.
Oh, no.
End of an era.
Yeah.
Larry Flint, oh, man. Oof.
You know what
God bless Larry Flint.
One of the best, purest Christians around.
Hey, you never know. Yeah, the pornographers are deeply Christian. I had the revelation today. I gave away some DVDs to a friend. I sent a friend, like, a box of some stuff that I don't necessarily need the other night. And I threw in my copy of Solo, The 120 Days of Sodom, because I was like, well, why would I ever need this satanic garbage in my house? Oh, my God. Ah, and got rid of it. And then today it hit me. I was like, whoa, that's like one of the most purely Catholic movies ever made. Like, that movie is that movie is literally saying, like, if you obsess on sex and the physical, you're in hell. You're living in hell. That is a purely Catholic movie, to be honest. And it's kind of blowing my mind. Think about, like, Pasolini was so deep with Catholicism, he was a literal pedophile. You go to his Wikipedia page, he talks about the 14-year-old that was the love of his life.
Oof, that's heavy. That's heavy.
Yeah. And I don't ever really want to watch Solo again. The first time I watched it, I was like 20 years old, and I was scared to walk to 7-Eleven after. I was like, no, I'm not leaving the house. No way. Like, in a circle of shit, no way. I'm not falling into that. But, no, Solo's beautiful. Solo's beautiful, man. The whole thing is Solo's a mirror in itself. And,
how do you spell it?
It's great. S-A-L-O. It's Pasolini's last film. It's based on the Jassad book, The 120 Days of Sodom. And the plot is, you know, Germany knows they're about to lose the war. And so they kidnap, I think, 14. They kidnap the children of the richest people in Germany, 7 girls and 7 boys. And they force them all to have, like, very bad ritual sex with each other. But one thing about the movie that a lot of people don't notice, you never see any sex. And that's a big thing Pasolini did on purpose. There'll always be, like, someone's leaning in and about something bad, and then the camera flips. So it's really elegant the way he actually never shows too much violence, except the end. The last scene is very violent and very disturbing. But he never shows actual sex or violence in the movie. That's the whole thing. And, like, I was looking at, like, stills from the movie, and it's just all, like, the big main dude talking about, like, how beautiful sodomy is, and how sodomy is the way to truth and the way to the essence and all this. And he's really openly just saying, like, if you obsess with the body, well, you're already in such, your soul's in such a prison that you're actually in hell. It hit me really hard. It hit me really hard because I was just on this, like, whoa, Pasolini was fucked. That dude was a Catholic, but, like, making straight up child porn, which he was. I mean, he was an actual pedo, but, yeah, that's weird the way it works. You never seen that movie, Bob?
No, I haven't.
I wanted to ask you.
Zach, I want to get clearer. What is your mother freaked out about in the media? You told her this last week.
What's
their deal?
Well, so I'll let me give a little bit of background. My mom worked in Democratic politics. My mom was part of the Cape Cod Democratic Party. I don't actually know. I wasn't really in close contact with her when she was working directly for the Democratic Party. But when I was a kid, she was a union organizer. And, like, I would come home and, like, John Kerry, Bill Delahunt, Ted Kennedy would be my living room. Ted Kennedy would be all drunk. And I'll keep this real, and I'll say this on the air. As a little kid, and I grew up around very bad people who did very bad things to children, my mom, the one person she told me to not go near, to never talk to, was John Kerry. And I don't know what that means, but she would always be like, and my mom doesn't really talk bad about people. She would be like, John Kerry's a fucking pig. She would always say that he's a true pig. And I would be, I just took it back then to mean like he hit on her or something. But what they talk about now in the news, I'm not going to say it myself, but she really would be like, if John Kerry's here, you stay in your bedroom, please. I don't want that man to see you. So that was always a little weird. But I don't know exactly. She was the head of the Cape Cod Democratic Council, whatever that means. And so, yeah, I grew up having, my mom and I would talk about civics. That was kind of the main thing, civics, politics. She grew up taking, like, pro-choice marches and stuff. And, she's a liberal, very much so. She voted Joe Biden kind of happily. But just the way this media stuff is playing out, she'll kind of be like, oh, okay, like, are people really so brainwashed that they think, like, a fucking typed executive order on a website is a real executive order? I'm like, well, yeah, Mom, they actually are. I've kind of realized that, like, most people just look at America the way Europeans used to, where they literally think that you can change symbols and that it's okay. That's not how the government works. Now, let me say something. That's how the intelligence agencies work. People forget that the FBI, the CIA, and even the NSA, they're not our government. They have nothing to fucking do with the government. They're private companies. They're literal private companies that are probably run by foreign entities, straight up. So the intelligence agencies have done a really, really good job here. And I'm kind of glad you brought this up, because I've had a few people hit me up being like, oh, I could tell the stuff you're hinting at on that show. Are you anti-vax now? Like, I'm not anti-vax, but you can't pay me to take a vaccine. You could kill me before you give me that fucking thing. So I'm kind of glad you brought this one out in the open, because I have people be like, oh, you think the election was stolen from Donald Trump? No, I think the election was fake. And I also think the elections from 2000, and I don't think, I know they were fake. I have a personal friend who I'm not going to name, whose father is the one who fixed the 2004 election, straight up. And I was living with the person at the time. I saw the, I helped clean the fucking office after it got flooded the night it came out that he did this. So, like, these things are very real, but that's not the government. And then, last week I went on this crazy, like, xenophobic, like, America's Christian, and we have a fucking military that's going to crush the world. Like, yes, that's brain dead. That's brain dead, but that's what reaction does to us. And I've been really thinking about that a lot this week. And I just more, like, I get heated because I don't think people outside of America understand that vibe. I don't think they understand that the intelligence agencies are not our government. They're the media. Like, they're just the tech body. Like, we have a government that has very specific rules, and they're based on the Bible. And this is why Christians bug out about Roe versus Wade. Because, now I'm not saying anything about abortion, I just told you, I grew up going to pro-choice marches, but Roe versus Wade is actually unconstitutional. And that's a huge red pill. I don't care, it's not a personal thing, but it's actually unconstitutional. It goes against our Constitution. So this is the way they slip these things in, and they do it very, very slowly. This is why Kennedy was killed. This is straight up why he was killed, because he wanted to get rid of the intelligence agencies, because he knew they were going to do a massive, massive entrainment campaign on people. And they've really brought it in so well that they're causing a fucking civil war. And, you know, my mom sees it with family members and stuff where, you know, she's a liberal, but she also kind of loves Trump. She thinks he's hilarious. She thinks he's cute, you know? She's like, oh, when he won't let Melania speak, that's so cute. You know what I mean? Like, he's such a little boy, you know? And, like, the liberal family members will be like, oh, so you're a literal Nazi now? You know? And then, like, the MAGA ones will be like, oh, no, that's not cute. He's the big, tough God Emperor, you know? So she started to get kind of red-pilled by just being like, well, what the hell? Like, this isn't even my opinion. This is just the objective opinion of how America works. Like, we have a specific law, and it's not coded. It's not coded. It's the literal biblical word. And I'm not saying America is a nation that God founded. That's, like, really blasphemous. But the founders of America, they thought that. And even if they were, like, Satanists, which, like, Franklin sure was, and they were just doing a, like, weird reverse of God's word, they still were kind of basing it on some biblical stuff here. So, yeah, the intelligence agencies, and this is where social media comes into play. This is where the internet itself comes into play. This is a long-term destabilization campaign. And the issue is they've sold reaction to us. And by selling us reaction, and by telling us reaction is the wrong thing, right? Well, what happens? You get a large crowd of people who avoid it. And actually, the same people, it's not even two crowds. The people avoid it, excuse me, and by avoiding it, they fall into these weird reactionary things. And this is, me and Blake had a long, long convo about this. I think one thing that's confusing to people is, I hear the term right-wing reaction a lot. In fact, I've said it myself. That doesn't exist. There's no such thing. This is why the alt-right, this is why we all are like, oh, why were they all liberals at first? Why do they seem like the most shit? Well, they are shit-libs. The right wing does not react. Again, I'll take it to pure biblical word definition. The right wing goes the right way, which means they support the status quo. That's all the right wing does. So yes, Black Lives Matter and Antifa for the last 4 years, they've been the right wing. Where the left wing, well, they just challenge. That's their only job. Their only job is to push back against the status quo. So we've had this real confusion, flip-flopping. Like, again, I was talking about Alex Jones in the 90s. Who liked him? Liberals, right? You know, liberals were into New Age. Liberals were into all the stuff now that QAnon boomers are into. This is all by design, and it's for mass confusion. And I don't expect anyone who hasn't spent considerable amount of time in America to understand this in any way, because it's hard for it. I fall into like this whole media hellscape thing, but for people my mother's age, I think this is really, really waking them up a bit to the fact that, you know, they've been living in a soap opera for 30, 40 years, maybe even longer. Well, really, since kind of Kennedy died. Since Kennedy died, it's really, I mean, think about it. Kennedy died, then Reagan gives his big spiel. Who's Reagan? He's a literal actor, right? These things are, it's not, I'm not saying it's a group of people behind the scenes planning it. It's more like, it plays out according to God's plan, where the people who go against his wishes are the ones who are actually doing his work. And they might be doing it by destroying themselves and others, but they're the ones who bring the revelation. Yeah, I just think there's so much going on now where, I'll just give an example that's a bit more like closer to my age. I don't know if any of you guys saw the FBI put up a photo of the QAnon shaman, right? the guy with the horns, and in the background, they used an image that was already doctored online, where the photo in the Capitol that was supposed to be one of the senators, it's of like some naked fat guy, and this is in all the newspapers. This is by design, and whether this is the tech body or whether it's actually planned, it's just for mass confusion and mass, you know, nuts. And the problem is it's outside of space and time here. So, you know, you could tell people, like, what's causing a literal civil war? And they're going to be like, oh, well, I don't see any actual war breaking out. When am I going to start seeing 100 people in the streets doing this? Well, that's not how it works. The way it works is, like, you know, I could be cooking dinner with my cousin, and I could say, like, oh, the election was a little screwy, don't you think? And I could literally be killed. You know, that's how this works. I had a friend lose his mind on me yesterday for just saying, like, well, it was just screwy. It just wasn't normal, and you know that. And the reason you're mad is because you know that. It's not that I'm right. Fuck me. I don't matter in this situation. You know that what you saw, you were gaslighted by the media's limelight, and you know that, and it upsets you. So I think, you know, older people are really just sort of waking up. And, of course, many are doubling down on the reaction. You know, I have people in my family who are rather, you're normally peaceful, and all of a sudden they're just like, oh, we got to kill all the Muslims to stop, like, doing this weird, like, stuff that Trump would big up. And, oh, we got to erect 20-foot walls around all the borders so, you know, destitute Mexicans don't come and work our jobs better than us. Right? But, yeah, it's just, you know, even I was talking to a friend who was in Germany yesterday, and, you know, he kind of was, like, not disbelieving, but thinking I was being hyperbolic with what I was saying. And then he was like, wow, America's really changed in the last few years, hasn't it? And I was like, yeah, it's not the same place anymore. And it's the intelligence agency's playground. It really is. I mean, Obama is a big piece of this. Obama, and I'm not saying anything about really the man himself, but the image he represents. Obama's fucking, it's Disneyland. It's like Midtown Disneyland hellscape in the White House, man. And, you know, it makes sense that the terms of his campaign, yes, we can, hope, change, right? Notice when faith never comes into it, which is what all these kind of things hint at. No faith. You can't have faith. Can't have faith. Just hope and change. But, you know, one thing I notice is a lot of my liberal friends waking up and being like, wow, the Obama years were worse than the Trump years. And that's like a big red pill they can't swallow yet. When they'll be like, okay, look, I just said that out loud, but can we change the subject? So what I kind of see with the Civil War, which is already going on, it's mainly a war of information, and there will be bodies in a lot of them, but not really in the way we think. These people are waking up very, very slowly, but they're going to have very rude awake. It's violence. And again, I always reference this when I talk about it. You know, violence is the quest for identity, because we're denied violence and we are actually denied identity. You think about the messages, you know, like right wingers love to pull, like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to feel bad about slavery. Yeah, actually you fucking are. Generational trauma is very real. And then in the next sentence, they'll be like, hey, if you're white, if I have a truckload of white babies, morality is heritable. Well, sure it is. It's not race-based, but, you know, races have different characteristics. So we should, all the races should make kids, even with each other. Of course, that's good. But you can't have one and not have the other. And that's the kind of, again, this is just like weaponized black and white thinking that the media and the intelligence agencies sell us, where people love to make, contradictory statements. Contradiction's absolutely fine. Just make absolutely wrong statements. Where they're like, oh, well, I feel this way. You know, I think when it comes to my race, this is how I think. But when it comes to the other race, you know, even when you get these BLM types who are like, okay, you know, let's worship black criminals. Well, that's what we've already been doing since the fucking 80s. Hip hop is like the biggest thing in our culture. We literally, you know, have black criminal idols, right? And I'm not even saying that's a bad thing. It might be an all right thing. But, you know, these same people will, like, worship black criminals, but then if a white guy gets beat up by even 10 other white guys, well, he deserved it. He can't admit that he feels bad about slavery. And it's like, it's not really a personal thing. I'm sure that person, if the media didn't feed them, and I don't even want to say thoughts, but these botched, Xeroxed percepts, in a sense, if the media didn't sell them that, I mean, these people, again, like I brought up, I joked on the show earlier about, like, yeah, you know, I let myself become disgustingly racist for days so I can think my way out of it. Well, that's really serious. That's something that I think people need to do. People need to drown themselves in the muck and in this garbage that we get thrown at us to realize that we're not actually in it. And they're not our thoughts. They're not even other people's thoughts. They're literally just media-fed percepts, all this garbage. You know, like, you get these little memers who just want to say racist words. They just want to type racist words, right? Well, I go into their spaces, and I type the same racist words at them, and they fucking shut down. They shut down. Or if I'm like, yeah, just say it. Just say it. And say it 50 times in a row if it makes you feel good. And they'll be like, but I can't do that. It's like, because you can't say it seriously. You can only say it ironically. Say it seriously and think of how disgusting you feel after you say it. People need to do that. People need to do that. And I'm not saying people need to meme about racist stuff, but maybe they do. Maybe that's the way. I mean, people don't realize that we have a free system of therapy out there already. There's already decentralized psychoanalysis going on. Look at the whole Orange Man Bad movement. I mean, people see this fat boomer who literally does nothing. He's an actor. He's a hologram. He gets on TV and just says, like, Rosie O'Donnell is fat, and I'm not signing the executive order. And people, oh, my God, he's a fascist. Oh, my God, he just told my grandfather to kill me. But the flip side of this is the grandfather starts screaming, oh, I'm a terrorist now? I just want to go to church. Well, yeah, you are. And so is the person accusing you of terrorism. People don't understand how terrorism works. Terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. And, like, there's a lot of great books on this from post-9/11. Baudrillard, Virilio, Zizek's Heretical Ass is a great one about it. But, you know, terrorism, it's not what people think it is. People hear terrorism and they think, oh, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda. Oh, God, people with turbans. Oh, no, right? No. I mean, sure, that can be terrorism, but, like, fucking half of Al-Qaeda can't, if Al-Qaeda's even real, they can't even afford weapons. Like, that's the biggest thing with the Muslim thing. Sure, they want to blow shit up. They can't even afford food. How the fuck are they going to buy a bomb? What the fuck's going on here? So, you know, Blake kind of really helped iron me out some of this. They're really creating a terroristic underclass in America, but it's not just the right wing. It's not just the right wing. It's the left wing, too, and it's the reactionaries all around. Again, I don't think the right can be reactionary, but, you know, we have to use these terms sort of in this way. But, yeah, it's you know, I see it with a lot of older people that I speak to, and the people who are really frozen and refuse to believe it are the Gen Xers and the Millennials, because the Gen Xers refuse to believe that punk rock was made by the CIA. When I drop that one on, people block me on the internet and stop talking to me. Like, you're so crazy, you're going to tell me that Jello Biafra worked for the CIA? Well, I mean, not literally, but, like, actually, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they all do. They all do, and we have as well. But, you know, the Gen Xers have this whole, it's really funny, Blake's brought this up too, how they're all sellouts. But their whole thing, like, 20 years ago was like, don't sell out. Oh, don't sign to a record label where you can make a living because, oh, well, how will you look in history? You probably look all right. You look all right. Oh, I took care of my family. Oh, no, such a bad thing. Just be a fucking bum forever and make records about it for other bums. So there's a... America's weird, man. I don't know how it's going to see its way out of this. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. And I don't think that means the intelligence agencies win. I actually think that means they crumble. But the issue here is everyone's an intelligence agency addict, even if you're just a social media addict, and it's the dopamine of the likes. Well, where does that come from? It comes from the intelligence agencies, man. You know?
Hey, Zach, in Cliched Archetype 1970, McLuhan said, espionage is our daily activity. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah, it is, and that's communism. That's communism. And communism is not Marxism. Marx was a dude, because communism, I think you said this, Bob, it's like 1830 or so is when it started. The
yeah.
Thing, the
yeah.
whole, you know. I mean,
shared and, hardware services.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Marx is what, like 1848, 1847
yeah.
or something? Well, so
yeah,
think about that. Yeah, this is already going on. Well, they get some other guy, some rich guy, who is definitely not a, you know, who owns a farm and has slaves and all that, to write a book about, like, okay, this is how we can all love each other without loving Jesus. Yeah, right, that doesn't work, you know? I mean, what is communism's biggest thing? A society without God. That is the main tenet of communism. There's no need for God. And that's the society we live in.
We don't know, we don't want no alphabet.
Yeah, oh, great. Exactly. And you can get into, like, all these other parts of it where it's like, well, there's literally central banks all around the world. That's how communism works. Read the fucking manifesto. But, and it's funny, too, you know, I was thinking today about this Zizek-Jordan Peterson debate. And when I watched it, I was like, oh, Zizek slayed his ass. You know, Jordan Peterson only brought up the communist manifesto. And I remember seeing people respond like, ha, ha, ha. Oh, Jordan Peterson thinks the manifesto is the basis of our work. And, well, this is how communism works, right? This is why the left can't admit Joe Biden's their leader. Because communism sells these, like, invisible things, and communism's whole thing is like, well, I mean, sure, he's a leftist, not a liberal. Oh, well, I'm left-wing, but not that kind of left-wing. And the right does it, too, because communism is total control. But the espionage thing, and, you know, some, like, little right-wing Zoomer that I follow on Telegram today, who, some White House analyst under Trump, was like, hey, has anyone coined the term blackmail industrial complex? And that's what this is. It's all just, I mean, I bring up the mafia a lot, because the mafia is, communism is the mafia. It's the same thing. It really is the same thing. And,
well, call it tribalism, but with different media dyes. Different media dyes.
But it's a weird, it's literate tribalism. It is. It's
yeah, that's what I mean. You have different media. You have literate phase of communism, the medieval phase, the analog media phase, the digital phase.
Right. So it's like in the Violence for a Quest for Identity, you know, he talked about the difference between the literate man and the tribal man. I don't think he understood that they were going to fuse into one and then become this crazy inner battle. Or maybe he did. McLuhan was pretty
astute. McLuhan said Marx, you know, he came from Cyprus or Crete or someplace. So he grew up in an agricultural, rural place. When he saw the industrial environment, he was so unshaped by it that he saw its stark outlines from the agricultural paranoia about it. So he was actually trying to retrieve his agricultural roots. You know, let's say medieval communism.
That's a great call. McLuhan's good at that. You know, I've heard a lot about how McLuhan has a really good, like, view on Marx. I'm not well read enough in McLuhan to know exactly what he says about Marx, but, yeah.
Well, you get the book Take Today. Barry Nevitt was a semi-Marxist, Barrington Nevitt, and he co-wrote the book. He said McLuhan didn't know anything technically, the Marxian book, so Barry sprinkles McLuhanist Marxian critique all the way through Take Today, so you want to see that. That's the book.
Sure, that sounds great.
So back to your mother, though. What is she disturbed by? What is she seeing?
Just division in a way that she's never seen. Or she's starting to see that, like, wow, this division's been really thick for a long time, and there's so much in the air that keeps me from it. You know? And people, instead of refusing to, like, see the mirror, just see the division itself and be like, wow, this is intense, they just double down on the media weirdness. Okay, well, QAnon boomers do this, and BLM energy photos this, and it's like, sure. You're not wrong here. You're fucking missing the point, though. You know? And it's hard, because if you think about QAnon itself as this extreme LARP to stop LARPing, right? That told people to go back to the Bible. Well, people go back to the Bible, but they read it wrong. They go back to the Bible, and they're like, all right, let me get my gun and kill everyone. No, the Bible tells Christians, like, we're supposed to walk into the teeth of the lion Like, literally. The Christians are supposed to be on the front line, but we don't need weapons. We have a weapon. It's called the Word. It's a literal sword. So, this whole...
Okay, back to your mother, because we're running out of time. Your mother stumbled the division between the Trumpers and the Bidenites, or within the Democratic Party?
Well, somewhat, but again, you're missing the point here because you're a boomer.
I'm a grand boomer. I'm from the great generation, the best generation.
She's just talking about the division in general in America and then how it plays out in the world, you know, with this, the way people can't even have fucking conversations anymore. You could tell someone like, wow, I thought the election was screwy, or someone else could be like, I'm 100% sure Joe Biden won. I'm 100% sure Donald Trump won. I mean, these are words that can get you killed now. These are words that can literally get you killed. People are scared to say that loud because they're like, oh, my neighbor is going to call the cops and send me to a FEMA camp. You know, it's...
So your mother woke up to this. Your mother woke up to the division or paranoia going on.
Yeah, slow. The Capitol thing really did that for a lot of people, I think. Because even my mother was like, she was like, okay, like, yeah, it's pretty stupid, but you're going to tell me that, like, people my age who skipped work to go take selfies in the Capitol, which is a building you're allowed to walk into, you're going to tell me that that's terrorism? Come on. People know better. People know better. And, yes, those people kind of are terrorists, but in a new sense. And that's what people don't get. The media does create the environment. So you can't be if you jump...
In the news, it says, footage, what is it? Demis Mulheri. During the impeachment, Democrats offer new, very graphic, violent footage, harrowing details, video, I guess, during the impeachment thing.
Yeah, and I see keep people seeing on Twitter, because they didn't show the video, being like, the Democrats literally showed violence, right? Well,
you know what that is? That's the tech body. Tech body created that footage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, they did. Well, that's the other thing, too. My mom, being working in that stuff, she's like, why would you can't impeach a non-sitting president. You can't do that. So either he's actually the president and they won't admit it, but she doesn't want it. She's like, that would be horrible. Or it's all just some weird media show and has nothing to do with our government. It's just this intelligence agency, PSYOP theater mania. What was going on.
So people are awaking to different levels of their rearview mirror legs.
Yeah, but the problem is most people only wake up a certain amount, right? So they wake up and get angry.
But
and
they're
they
being
kill
shocked. One point and they say, I didn't know that was happening, but there's quadriphenic or more realities going on, and they don't see all of that. But that means different people, like your liberal friends, get woken in a weird way by January 6th, you know? And then the lefties get awakened, and they go flip. Hip-hop.
Exactly. And the liberals are kind of flipping out, because the liberals are like, well, when we do a revolution, we burn stuff down. So what, you're gonna tell me a... That boomer taking a selfie is revolution, right? And then they have their friends who scream revolution with them being like, put these motherfucking terrorists in jail. So the lefties have no friends anymore. You know, so they've been like deserted, left in the sea. And so they're just like looking for a life raft in anything. They're like, explain memes to me. Talk me out of Trump derangement syndrome, please.
Meanwhile, thousands of Republicans are leaving the party. They say there's nothing left. Everybody's moving into another direction, 100 different directions.
And that's what people don't notice here. It's just, great point. Let's get totally nonpartisan. We're just witnessing a massive restructure of society. Yeah, like, both parties are falling apart.
There's a massive search for identity or structure. Some new structure.
Yeah.
Because the old structures don't make the media. The tech body destroys the previous structures for everybody.
Yep, and the only thing that these people want to do, right, is just, well, like, the Republicans want to be like, six GOP senators voted against Trump. Call them and yell at them, right? And the Democrats just want to be like, oh,
when I do Revolution, it's way cooler. And my friends want my grandmother in jail now. So they're still just focusing on each other and just focusing on this dumb stuff without looking at the much bigger picture. And it's hard to, because, you know, before Trump, like, Europeans used to have a great view of America. They could, like my European friends could be like, all right, dude, like, I could talk about this in a media sense, or I can talk about this in a much deeper sense, and, like, you fucking Americans are narcissistic assholes. You're so obsessed with yourself. Well, once Trump won, all my, like, level-headed European friends were just like, oh, Mike, you own a Donald Trump mug? You're a literal fascist. You're a literal fascist, and I hope you die. Whoa, what?
What?
So... You can't look around the world anymore. You used to be able to look across the globe and check yourself and be like, okay, I can go to my friend's home.
Zach, we're articulating the disease. What does the Mayer University do about this? How do we create a curriculum for people going in 100 different directions? Or what is the role of the curriculum? Let's think about that on air for a minute. Bring in our curriculum master, Blake. Of course, Blake should have an opinion.
Yeah, we're great.
Who the hell is Blake from the Department of Opinions? What?
It's a great question. I mean, I tend to think that we're doing it just by just by having conversations, and I mean,
exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, just. Like, look, it doesn't really matter what we think is going on. That's what people don't understand, kind of, because if they're invested in their sort of their role, right? McLuhan had it like fucking 40 years ago. He had it right that there are really no more sort of jobs. There's just roles that people play.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you think that your role that you're playing is like somehow your identity, like let's say you're a professor at some mediocre college somewhere, right? They're all mediocre now, so that could be anywhere.
any professor.
So but if you identify as like, okay, I'm a professor, I'm the guy that everybody should be listening to, you know what I mean? Then you're not really going to be able to communicate with other people very well, right? Because if someone disagrees with you, that's a threat to, you know, the world as we know it. Like, if nobody listens to me, I'm the expert. You know, if you don't listen to me, then fuck our world. You know, that's the cause of our problems. Like, if only people just listened to the experts, we'd be fine.
Yeah.
You know? And so if you invest too much in these roles that, you know, like everybody can play whatever role they need to, right?
But McLuhan said you can't do a role for more than 6 months because things change so much, you got to switch your role.
Well, yeah. And the problem is that if you get too used to that role and you start to think that you are that guy, I am this role, then it's hard for you to learn anything. It's hard for you to adapt. It's hard for you to sort of hear.
Right. So we have different big pictures to apply to the messy content. Different big pictures and framings. Like, we can use McLuhan, or you can LaRouche, or your math, or Zach can use his mafia background, anything we can get. Clinton can use his technical stuff and his salesmanship with beer. We have different big meanings. I read once that our brains look at details, and another part of the brain has a big meaning frame. The point is, we're not living in one frame anymore. So if you can come up with different ways to help someone get a perspective or get out of their detail obsession, that's the role, and we can do that by talking.
Well, the main thing, right, to understand is that it always actually has been like this, and it's only for a very narrow window in historical terms that anybody was fooled into thinking that, like, linear, deterministic causation was the only type of causation.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, by reading DeLubach's Medieval Exegesis, you can acquaint yourself with the fact that in the Western world, multi-leveled exegesis has always been the norm until this brief moment between basically the Enlightenment and the mid-20th century.
Yeah.
Where people actually thought that, you know, it's like people took the metaphor that the of the book of nature too literally for a little while.
Yeah,
what a good point. What a good point. They forgot about the book of life and went straight metaphorical book of nature.
Yeah, yeah. Like, listen, I got a hold of this. I ordered, this is funny tech body anecdote. I ordered this book that our friend recommended to us by Sophia Cavaletti called The Religious Potential of the Child.
Yep.
Everybody listening should get this. And I opened it. Well, we were talking about 2 hours ago to page 160, where there's a portion of the book called about parables in the Bible and the method of teaching by parables. The parable has a special position among the biblical signs. It's composed of words, however, its character as a word is not to make explicit, but rather to hide and veil, making it, in some sense, a sign twice over. Paraphrasing Saint Augustine, we could say the sign, you sense one thing and understand another thing from it. The parable is a method of teaching. We can even say that it's the method of the teaching of Jesus. The secret of the parable resides in its concealing what it wants to teach. The parable does not explain, clarify, or define. It offers an element for meditation. St. Jerome, in speaking about parables, that's one of the patristic church fathers, right, adopts the image of a nut enclosed in its shell. We could add the image of a jewel encased in a box wrapped in many layers of paper. We're not able to get at the savory or precious contents right away. In the parable, there's
sort of involvement
behind which.
It creates involvement.
And
we have a caller, guys, from Detroit.
Oh, great.
This could be a former employer of Zach. Reggae guy.
Female drug dealer.
Yeah. So go ahead, 313-930. Say something. Hopefully you are opinionated.
You're most welcome.
They're not saying yet, so I'll keep watching them to see if they say something. They got to learn how to unmute their phone. But back to you. Did you finish, Blake?
Yeah, I just was going to point out that, you know, the multi-levels of meaning is not something, it's not artifice. It's not a kind of, it's not just a put-on, right?
Right.
A put-on mimics it, right? Put on minutes.
It's the way the majority of humanity thinks.
It's just the way nature works, right?
Yeah.
It's the way nature communicates.
Yep. The book was a serious disruption.
Yes.
The book was a serious disruption. I mean, Ian says it led to a dark age.
People don't realize that at all.
Mm-hmm. No. And the book had services, but there was huge disservices in it. And maybe you could say it was the most unnatural distortion to extend the eye to the exclusion of the other senses.
Well, to imprison the eye in one particular mode of exegesis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would say realizing that is your ticket to get to the postgraduate mirror university.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's what we all know, and not many people know it, but we here know it.
And the thing is, a lot of people do know it, but they don't know that they know it in the fooled into being able to actually talk about it.
Right. Well, it's because people, and again, I'll take it real basic, but we don't know our own thoughts because we don't correctly use grammar, because when we should be being taught that in school, instead we're taught like, hey, Louis Pasteur's dog was bright pink, so write a paper about like what the opposite of pink is, because that's what the opposite is, the same thing. Think about zero only.
I would never come up with that sentence. I knew nothing about that world.
Yeah,
do you want to hear something Canadian?
I beg your pardon?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
So, Mill Street's brewery, one of the biggest craft brewers in Canada, is being sued by the Tragically Hip because of their beer called 100th Meridian Amber Lager.
Oh, no.
My mom had a Tragically Hip tape when I was young.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what they are, but that's such a Canadian name, it kind of blows my mind.
Yep. We all Canadians grew up listening to the Tragically Hip in some.
I'm sure you did. We had the convo last night where I realized, like, because, like, the education that they started in America, like, in the 2000s, you guys already had that in Canada. That's just, like, America and Canada are just have merged. People don't really understand it. And Mexico, too. I mean, that whole North American Union conspiracy, that's pretty real, actually.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The NAFTA highway.
There's this professor, ex-professor from University of Tulsa, Julianne Romanello. Look at a couple of videos. She's talking about the techno-fascism that's taken over universities, and it happened to Tulsa in April 2019. It's a very interesting exposure of what's going on to the professor world that I'd never heard before.
When I want techno-fascism, I put on Drexia Records.
What's Drexia?
Oh, I'm not. That'll be a whole fucking show. I was writing a book about Drexia that I never finished.
Yeah, fuck that.
Just techno-fascism. Black fascists.
Right. There was a leader of that world who claimed to be a member of the Prior of Sion. Some leader of black heavy metal.
Wasn't his dad Prior of Sion?
No. Well, he didn't know what it really was. He just put on the mythology. Maybe he read Robert Anton Wells or something. But he was taken seriously in the black neo-Nazi heavy metal movement, which Dave Emery, the follower of Mae Russell, exposed a lot.
Oh, you mean black metal. I mean like black people who were obsessed with that.
No, black metal. Just think of some guy who was a good interviewer, a good talker. Wagner. Say it again?
Varg, the Burzum dude?
No, that's not familiar. Okay,
sure.
Doesn't
matter. Even know about that type of garbage. Yeah, you don't even know about that type of garbage. It's better not to.
Yeah. I prefer to see a snow rather than 50 kinds of snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, me too.
Snow is snow. Yeah.
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 The word
snow
is literal.
Mean snow. How would we know snow?
At least you don't see locusts.
Yeah. So, Clinton, you didn't get to say much tonight. What would you like to say to wrap it up? We only got a few minutes left.
Sure. Pop music, satanic. I was rereading Plato's Cave yesterday, like the actual text between Socrates and Glaucon, and I noticed that the guy who gets freed from his chains and is liberated into the sunlight is actually dragged, kicking and screaming, and all he wants to do is go back and sit back down to where he was, and so, like, if he's forced out against his will and dragged into the sunlight, and then he's blinded, it was the entire Enlightenment experience is utterly torturous and then awful, and then were he to go back down, he would most certainly be killed by the other people, but he'd hate them anyway because he'd look down on them, right? And, like, it basically makes the entire Enlightenment process a total bad fucking trip. And then I thought of the lyrics to I Saw the Sign by Ace of Base.
Yes.
And if you think about the lyrics, it's literally, you know, I saw the sign. It opened up my eye to saw the sign. and I'm happy living without you, right? No one's going to drag you up to get you into the light where you belong. It's like, so they acknowledge that you need to get dragged, but no one's going to do it. So you didn't really open your eyes, and you didn't really see the sign if no one ever dragged you up, or you were left behind and she's mocking you. But I thought that was an interesting take.
Thank you very much, guys.
What a good ending.
Stay on the line.
That was a run.
Thank you.
Grant, that was an amazing analogy, guys.